Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com.
It's almost as though we're getting a form of normality back. We're now up to the 104th Zuma, and the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions are continuing. And, of course, one of the legends of recent years who has blessed us with his presence when he's come along to the Midweek Drive is, of course, the head of School of English and Journalism at the University of Lincoln. It's the fabulous Professor Jason Whittaker. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Alex. Very pleased to be here again. It's been far too long since I've been on Midweek Drive.
And this is, as I say, possibly the way the Midweek Drive will be for the foreseeable future in many ways. And no bad thing about that, it has to be said. It's something that after a period of time, we're wondering, where are we going with all of this? And as you're well aware, I was broadbandless, I was disconnected, I was lost in Middlesbrough, which is a whole new world, really. accessing this, it certainly does enable us to do a whole range of activities and also reduce the transport markedly. Case in point, normally from March to this time, I would have clocked up around about 10 to 12,000 miles. Total mileage so far, 110.
Yes.
It's saving the planet.
For the past 4 months, until last week, actually, we hadn't travelled further than 10 miles away from our home. And become locked in this little bubble of a Lincolnshire village. So, yes, I understand entirely what you're saying.
It's fine. The hello there suggests that Gabriella Peralta is just about connecting from Gibraltar. We did a piece with Gabriella earlier this morning. And of course, Gabriella has been in pretty much total lockdown since March as well. Fine journalist, graduate from the University of Lincoln. I think before your time, Jason, actually. It's about 5 years ago when Gabriella Peralta finally left our fair shores to become the Gibraltar Chronicle's finest. And now we say, Gabriella Peralta, welcome to the Midweek Drive again.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. Got us a very impressed Jason. He's well into the internet etiquette, muting his microphone immediately when you come on board. I think we're okay, Jason. It's okay. We probably won't get hired. If we do, obviously, we can do that. It's all part of the course. And Gabriella often likes to go into the witness protection scheme, as I said, for the Zoom calls. I do it myself for staff calls at the University of Lincoln and actually just have a sort of silent image on that part of you. Or are you actually live, Gabriella?
I'm trying to do the video, so I don't know what I've done. I've got the microphone to work, so that was something.
That's all we need, Gabriella. Honestly, it's radio. Seriously, we don't need to go any further. Gabriella, I think, let me see, who was, it would have been, who was the head of school when you actually graduated? Was it John Tallock or was it Debbie Wilson?
I remember Debbie.
Yes, everybody does. but anyway, apart from that, Jason, you've
not too sure. Time.
Yeah, and just share with us, Gabriella. When did you actually graduate?
I graduated in 2014.
Right. Which is fine. Jason, you'll need to unmute yourself, otherwise I'll have to lip read, and that's not going to work at all well on radio.
Unless it happened automatically.
Yes. Exactly.
My machine seems to be trying to preempt me. Shut up. Yeah, I was just saying that I joined Lincoln in 2015, so it would have been the following year after you graduated, yes.
And I think it's fair to say, Jason, that when you actually joined us from, of course, the wonderful place of Falmouth, you probably, in your most science fictional crazed outlines, or indeed William Blake-esque dreams with respect to angels and so on, you never quite envisaged this scenario taking place in terms of higher education in the world, let alone Lincoln in 2020.
No, although it's regarding the kind of the Blakean aspect, it is very interesting. A friend of mine, Louisa Calais, who teaches at Birkbeck College in London, she got us all involved, sort of fellow Blake heads, in a discussion about the fact that Blake had done a series of illustrations around famine and plague. Really, of course, although the 18th century was generally better off for people living in the England's green and pleasant land, it was still closer to the period of the Black Death than we are today. So actually, in living memory of lots of people that Blake was dealing with, cities and towns and villages would have been closed down on an infrequent but occasional basis. So actually, I never thought I'd be subject to any kind of lockdown myself. But you know, any student of history and student of literature will actually spend their time realizing that previous generations have been far less lucky than we have. And now we're getting a small taste of that, those terrible consequences, really.
Gabriella, you were one of the first people to actually go into lockdown in Gibraltar when you had a sniffle, and effectively you were banned from the Gibraltar Chronicle and sent home immediately. Yeah. And we've spoken over the last few weeks about how you found that. I mean, as from your own sort of professional work, and again, thank heavens you're still in work, etc., just share with us what sort of difference it's made to your everyday work as a jobbing journalist with the Gibraltar Chronicle.
A lot less meeting in person and a lot more phone calls. And I don't do Zoom as much, but sometimes I do WhatsApp video calls and things like that. So for a time, it was really strange because usually you'd want to meet someone in person, but instead you were doing the complete opposite and avoiding it completely unless it was absolutely necessary to meet them. So it is odd, and usually you're used to a newsroom and people are coming in and out and everyone's talking and bouncing off stories, and instead I'm at home alone. So it's very strange as well, getting used to the silence.
I mean, Jason, that sound of silence, to quote the classic Simon and Garfunkel song, is that the whole thing? I mean, because in a sense, there are some things that continue as normal. Case in point, seconds before we actually connected for this particular call, I received my notification that my track analysis survey will be coming out in August, so I need to actually make sure that's completed by September. Exactly. So the University of Lincoln knows exactly how I'm spending my time.
Living the dream. Exactly.
but again, just commenting on what Gabriella was saying there about the sound of silence and so on.
I'd like to take a slightly different tack to comment on it professionally, because like a lot of people who are working in various, let's face it, white collar sectors, we found ourselves then involved in endless interminable meetings. I actually want to consider the sound of silence from a very different perspective. At the beginning of the lockdown, we lived a couple of miles away from a woodland, which we take the dogs to every day to walk around. And with regard to the sound of silence, which you asked about specifically, it was absolutely astonishing at the beginning of this year to actually realise what silence does sound like, in that it's very, very rare. I mean, even when, so we live, 38 miles an hour drive to the Peak District. And even when you go there, there are people driving, there's traffic on the roads. In fact, you know, you can look over green fields and it looks incredibly bucolic. And there's, you know, the A6487 with lorries thundering past you. So actually an incredible notice, which I realised this year, is just how rare it is actually to experience silence, particularly when you're outdoors. So we live in the middle of the countryside, but still there's constant traffic apart from the very small hours. So I've said this, the sound of silence. I meant, of course, human silence. Because what we were experiencing on a regular basis was the most incredible birdsong I think I've ever heard in my life. Because there was no competing human activity. So strictly speaking, I'm still waiting to know what the sound of silence is. I think the nearest I get, which returns to, I think, what you were talking about or what you're referring to originally, which is when you're in Zoom calls or working through our online learning system with students, and you're speaking into the void, it feels very often. Yeah, you have all these participants you can see displayed in a list, but nobody quite understanding the protocols, particularly when we had to do it so quickly. So yeah, you're speaking and not having anybody respond, which I like to think is not usually the way I lecture.
I just like to think it's like radio, Jason, you know, speaking into the void. We don't know who's there. But Gabriella, turning to you, to yourself, I mean, we've spoken of how Gibraltar has actually coped and how it's still very quiet in terms of lack of tourism and so on. As part of that part of the country, which I think you need to share this with Jason, because I still think it's a fantastic statistic, the percentage of people who voted for Remain in Gibraltar was?
96, if I remember correctly.
96%. So,
yeah.
that I can see is a fairly significant yeah. result. But what the heck?
It was, I think, the first time all political parties had joined together on one thing in Gibraltar. So it was quite an occasion, I remember. And we were quite shocked about the result, to be honest, over here.
Well, the reason I just mentioned that before we go on to talk about how Gibraltar is it's part, of course, of the four apocalyptic themes that the government are apparently preparing us for. A second wave of the coronavirus, Brexit, obviously, flooding, and, of course, the ongoing side of the flu pandemic, which is completely separate from the coronavirus pandemic. So fun times ahead, I would say. Gabriella, back to yourself. Just share with us again some of your own experiences. And of course, talk about Jason's dogs there. You've got your famous Frodo the pug, who is now 6 years of age.
Yeah, he's hurt his paw walking down the street.
So
we've had to take him to the vet for that. But he's got a bit better. He might have an ulcer, though, from walking on what they think could have been something not poisonous but hazardous to them. So he's much better now, but he wasn't feeling too well earlier this week. But he's loved this pandemic completely and entirely. I'm sure he's loving all the extra time at home.
And I'd like to feel, Jason, that ultimately we can say, you know, if we've kept our canine friends happy, then at least it's been for something, really.
Well, I mean, we've got three dogs here, three Jack Russells, and at least one of them, possibly two, are going to suffer incredible stresses when we return to work and are no longer working from home. They've become completely used to us being around the house all the time. Yeah,
Of course, they've been dogs. It's not just the dogs, Jason. You've got a whole menagerie of animals there. I mean, I think the last list, I thought, is it Professor Jason Whittaker or Dr. Doolittle? It's amazing.
Yes, actually, that's been a pleasure during lots of these similar Zoom meetings, etc., where I've got chickens. So we have 11 chickens, some of whom are incredibly noisy. So there is this cacophony. Not at the moment, it must be said. They've recently had their evening feed, so they've shut up for the moment. But yeah... Just to add to it, though, because my home address is at a place called Cockerell's Roost, it seems fitting to have the sound of wildfowl bleating away in the background.
I think I mentioned in a sidebar comment in a staff meeting a few weeks back, I did feel that the scratching of the hens in the ground, etc., was very analogous to the kind of planning for virtual open days at certain universities. I won't mention any names, but it's just a thought. You know, that I just thought, you know, it's kind of comes through on that.
I couldn't possibly comment on that.
Of course not. Gabriella, chance for you to throw any questions you'd like to Jason at this stage, because, of course, you're still very much part of us. I know that Ellie Sample was delighted to connect with your good self when she was over in Gibraltar recently. You are effectively our main School of English and Journalism graduate in Gibraltar. Any questions you'd like to put to Jason at this stage?
How odd has it been then... doing your job at home and dealing with the students? How's the whole situation been for you?
It has alternated between being strangely exhilarating in some cases, that, you know, after the initial panic of how the hell are we going to do this, realizing that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention and you just have to. At times, I won't lie, it's been incredibly stressful. I've noticed simple things when working in the office and, you know, on campus, the very simple fact that you have to move around buildings and go to different locations kind of gives you a break from the endless incessant meetings. Whereas here it's literally, and today is a case in point, it's back to back from one straight onto the next. Students themselves, it's been, I mean, at Lincoln, I have been really very, very touched about how students and staff have worked with each other. There's been a really strong sense of engaging students at every step of the way. I've received some wonderful emails and comments from students about staff who've been helping them out. Because I think what happened was this was a crisis that obviously affected large sections of the world simultaneously. And the students were fully aware that the staff at Lincoln were just pitching in, which I don't think was the case at every other institution, it must be said, just to quickly get a plug in there. I am actually, though, when all's said and done, I'm really looking forward to getting back on the campus. Ironically, I think lots of people have thought, I would love to work from home. I've come to the conclusion that I don't. I actually want to be not simply in rooms with people, but also I very often find, because the kind of job that I have does involve lots of things one after the other, I find myself in one place for most of the day. And actually, I'm looking forward to being mobile, of meeting other people, of being able to break up sessions and walk around a bit more and things like that. Our home is lovely. We love living here. But actually, I'm looking forward to getting back in the workplace for a change of scenery, it must be said.
And have the courses changed? I remember when I used to do journalism in Lincoln, how practical it was, and every single week we had news days. Yeah. So had you had to also change the courses
so that
the students could do it at home?
Yes, I mean, obviously, so it still remains as practical as ever. But, you know, in fact, if anything, the number of news days has probably increased for a number of students. So what we then found was that... Actually, I'm going to approach your question slightly differently. I do a fair amount of work with news agencies like Thomson Reuters and The Guardian, and actually speaking to editors and journalists who've been working there, they went into the same shock as everybody else, that, you know, instead of just being able to phone up some, what you were saying earlier, instead of being able to kind of very quickly arrange meetings, particularly if you're based in London, with an expectation that you were going to be able to go to somebody's office or, you know, a public place to conduct interviews with them, then trying to get them to conduct virtual interviews, to do stuff over the phone. That's, you know, hitting the phones has always been a part of journalists' jobs. Where the biggest difficulty I think our students found at an early stage, and which has applied to a lot of journalists in the UK, I don't know about Gibraltar, is the fact that so many people then were put on furlough. So, of course, for example, if you're doing, you know, classic bread and butter journalist pieces about stuff that's going on with the council, you may find that the students found that the people they were trying to contact were simply not available. You know, they've been placed into furlough and were no longer actively working in whatever occupation it might have been and that you needed a response from. So there are lots and lots of challenges. But in one sense, it was the same challenges as I think were found by journalists in my experience who are working for news organisations. What our students were then doing, you're less reliant on serendipity of being, you know, in the courts or in the council chambers or things like that to get your news story. It involved a lot more prepping what you need to do and then hitting the phones, getting interviews set up online.
I think that sums up perfectly a wonderful sort of response there, Jason. And who knows where we're heading? I do know that I'm fascinated by the social teepees that have been set up for students, I believe. And I'm actually booked to do one of those sessions as part of the WOW thing in September, which is wonderful. Gabriella, it's been awesome as ever connecting with your good self, but I need to put those last two questions to Jason first. First of all, Jason, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the midweek drive today?
I've had an extremely interesting session. It's been far too long since we've done midweek drive.
Exactly, but we knew we'd get there. That's the important thing. We get there in the end. Gabriella, what about yourself? Has been good for you. Second one today, of course.
I have, thank you. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
So can we look forward to featuring you both again in the very, very near future? I know, Gabriella, you're booked for next week. Jason, will you be able to return sometime in the not too distant future?
Well, if you're running through August, yes, definitely.
Fantastic. I'm off now to a Resonance Rewind session in which we're commenting on the first ever episode of Irwin Allen's Land of the Giants. It's called The Crash, which could have so many sorts of metaphorical resonances for the present day, but so it goes. Professor Jason Whittaker and Gabriella Peralta, many thanks indeed. It's time, actually, for the first ever shared Zoomer for the official weekly Midweek Drive philosophy slot with, of course, our resident station philosophy person and philosopher and graduate of St. Andrews University, Poppy Booth. How are you, Poppy?
I'm very well, thank you, yeah.
Marvellous, yes. Normally we're used to, on Wednesdays when we record new episodes of Resonance Rewind using the Zoom system, and on a Saturday morning, normally it's television, it's telephone, etc. But here we are expanding the range, etc. And we're delighted to welcome somebody who will be, lockdown facilities permitting, actually sharing the Zoom camera with Robin Pierce sometime in August, because you know once she's connected with Robin Pierce, clearly just can't get enough of our Welsh sci-fi soul. It's our ace graduate and all-round wonderful person and fan, of course, of Dean Martin. You might be able to recognise that in the background with Dean Martin, Fred Astaire, and I think it's Sinatra who's actually dead centre there. It's Eloise Sheehan. Yay!
Hi, Alex.
And seeing who's joined us now, fresh from actually practicing his bum bumps, as indeed outlined by Liz Brewer, and perhaps not so much Richard Fitzwilliams, and I certainly won't be practicing it when I'm down in Lincoln on Tuesday. Ben Lewis, how are you, Ben?
Morning, Alex. Very well, thank you. Morning,
you know, Alex. I think it's the first time you've been on a show with Eloise for well over a year, isn't it?
It's been a long time, hasn't it? It's been a very
long
time.
It has been quite a while.
It's a change for, what's his face? Paul McGrath. Paul McGann, isn't it? Paul McGann. Has your love changed with him any time since?
Yeah, interesting. No Paul McGann photograph in the background there, Louise. Bit of a surprise, though. I thought there might have been a big sort of, you know, like, oh, wait, is that the life-size carbon cutout that you've got in front of the actual camera?
I thought the tattoo was enough. I didn't think I needed a poster as well.
Okay. Poppy. It falls to you now to begin to actually outline what philosophical wonders have come to mind, possibly through watching the first episode of Land of the Giants, The Crash, of course, and reviewing it on Resonance Rewind, and sharing that before Eloise gives us her critical review of one of the shows she might have been listening to via our many and varied podcasts. So, Poppy, where do you want to take us so far?
I didn't really take much from the episode.
From Land of the Giants?
Philosophy. So I kind of just thought I'd go back to some basics today and talk about utilitarianism, which I feel like is one that a lot of people are familiar with. But I thought, you know, there's actually three different types of it. So I thought I'd just kind of explain what the
Let's
three
just
types
test
are.
That, Poppy. Let's just test that. Ben, utilitarianism. Does it strike a chord?
Well, I've heard of utilitarian, which is what we use with a car, actually, to say it goes off-road and does utilitarian.
Nice. I see what you did there. It's good. Eloise, utilitarianism. Are you looking it up as we speak?
No, I'm actually talking to Zoe Jameson. So.
Yeah, Zoe's healing people at present, because Zoe just texted me to say that she's got an emergency in the office, which is why our vet isn't there. She's actually helping save animal lives.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking to her at the moment. No, I have actually no idea.
So there we are, Poppy. You've got a clean field to actually go in how to explain the maximum amount of good for the greatest number of people. Take it away, Poppy.
Yeah. Basically the premise of it is it's an ethical way to live your life, and you have to follow the principle of utility, which is basically to do something that provides the greatest amount of good for the greatest number of people. And that's the basic idea. Like, it's pretty much like that. And it was founded by a man called Jeremy Bentham, who is quite a big philosopher, especially in utilitarianism.
And indeed, I believe you can still actually see his skeleton in Imperial College London. Is that not correct?
Yeah, I think he gave himself to the museums, which was very, very utilitarian.
And the museum said, let's just put it on display so we can actually see this man, you know?
Yeah, it's very, very kind of him. But also, you need to make decisions when you're thinking about what is the greatest good for the greatest number from the perspective of someone who is benevolent and disinterested. So you need to be unbiased when you think about it. It's not that you can't be selfish at all when you think about it. So Bentham, basically, when he created it, thought of act utilitarianism. And that's basically the idea that you should do the action that will provide the greatest good for the greatest number. So that's kind of the basic rule. And then a lot of people thought that that was a bit, you know, there's lots of actions that you could do that actually don't seem logical at all when you break it down. So you could, there's an example of a person, so you've got a person who needs a heart transplant, a person who needs a liver transplant, a person who needs a kidney transplant, and a person who needs a lung transplant. And so they're all on a waiting list, and the doctor that is treating them knows that they're probably gonna die before they're, before anyone comes up as a match. And then you have someone who has no immediate family, no one really likes them, and they're probably, you know, a bit close to death anyway, I don't know. And so if you're an act utilitarianism, utilitarian, you should technically kill that person to help everyone else, because if that person was a match for all the other organs, then you'd be helping four other people instead of one. So that weighs up to be the fact that if you do that action, then that is maximizing the good for the biggest number.
And yet, obviously, nobody actually thought of those philosophical details when Boris Johnson was in critical care. Never mind. It might have helped us. I'm not making a recommendation here. I'm just saying it might have helped, you know? Eloise, thoughts for yourself. Do you feel as though you've unpicked utilitarianism now? Is it something which you would identify with as a case of, no, I'm far too fascinated with my text messages from Zoe?
Sorry, I have an ill pet. I'm just worried. No, I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? So,
right. Did you say you had? Does this mean that your favourite and relatively recent addition to the Sheehan household, your cat Jack, is actually unwell?
No, one of my little hamsters is unwell, and I'm not sure why. So, trying to get some help from Zoe.
Right. Right. I will obviously investigate further, and if I find... No, it's okay. I mean, clearly, your hamster means a lot to you, Eloise. Is it being looked after by your mum?
No, I came back from seeing my mum yesterday, so right. Back at home, but we noticed that he's not very well.
So your hamster didn't actually travel with you then?
He did. The whole zoo came with me. My partner, my cats, my hamsters, right, they all
right,
came to
right. my mum. I mean, Poppy, this looks like a kind of, you know, potentially a philosopher's thought experiment gone crazy. You know, I mean, in the events that you got a poorly hamster, poorly cat, you know, human beings, etc., where would you actually go? Where would the philosophers take us?
Well, you see, that actually takes me very neatly onto another type of utilitarianism by Peter Singer, who was a big animal rights advocate. And he basically said that humans and animals are on completely the same level and you shouldn't choose anyone over the other. And his type of utilitarianism is preference utilitarianism, which basically the idea is that the consequences that you want to promote are the ones which satisfy the preferences of the most number of beings that have preferences, if that makes sense. So if there are three humans and one tree, you should go with the decision that satisfies the humans, because they're the ones that have preferences. But then Peter Singer would say, if the hamster was involved, that hamster has just the same amount of preference as the humans. So then it gets a bit more complicated.
Ben, I mean, clearly we, and not to actually sort of put any sort of negatives on the recent summer of challenges that we've had with the BLM movement, etc. But should we actually start a campaign now, and wearing your PR hat, obviously, to say, look, hamsters' lives matter too?
I mean... It's all down to preference, isn't it, and perspective. So I guess in Eloise's case, hamsters' lives do matter. In my case, I've never owned a hamster. I've nothing to do with hamsters. Not even a hammy hamster that you have.
Hammy's not on duty, but you'd be pleased to know that the person you can't recognise obviously is on duty. So there we are. You know.
Yeah. I'm glad I don't have a hammy hamster. I think it'd probably be somewhere else right now. But it's... I think, to me, anyway, for me, it's all perspective on that front. I guess I can see both sides of that. I mean, turning back to the first one, it reminds me of disaster movies, that you always have a hero character. The one I was thinking of was Independence Day. I think it's Independence Day when the old boy goes up into the... You've seen it, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah, I forgot the name of the character. He goes up into the middle
Will
of the
Smith.
Space. Yeah.
Will Smith.
Will Smith who does it. It was... it was the older character in it who basically sacrificed his life for the sake of everyone else, but because he was old, he'd already had his life, etc. So that's what it kind of reminds me of, anyway. It might not be in the same context, but yeah, it's, I don't know. Go, turn it back to the hamsters. I've digressed, but I think it's all perspective. You know, for me, it would be dogs. I'd do the same with dogs, but hamsters don't mean much to me, but that doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't matter at all. It's just, I guess, personal preference.
Does this help, Eloise? Does it help kind of give you a bit of perspective to actually sort of put in terms of, you know, whether it's Jack the cat or indeed the anonymous hamster?
Anonymous hamster. His name's Francis. Yes, no, I love them all the same. So it doesn't matter what animal it is. They're all rather important to me.
Francis the hamster. Poppy, yeah. Did you ever think when you graduated from St. Andrews earlier this year that you would end up actually giving advice on people with hamsters, trees, cats and dogs on a Saturday morning?
You know, it wasn't the top idea that I had, but it was, you know, probably in the top 10, I think, of dreams, big dreams that I had after graduating.
Exactly. It just opens up a whole thing. Anyway, Ben, have you got any questions you'd like to put to Poppy about life, the universe, what it was like studying in a foreign country? Let's face it, it is Scotland, and so on.
Well, the first one, actually, because I'm guessing quite big on philosophy.
Well, I did English and philosophy as my degree.
Okay. Who's your favourite philosopher and why?
It's a tricky question. I don't know if I actually have a favourite, because part of the course has mainly just been to learn about them and then say why they're bad. So I feel like I have a lot of reasons why all of them aren't great.
Who's the one you least like then, if that's the case? That's easier.
Yeah, that's true. That's hard. I mean, on this radio station, we've talked about a couple, and I've said that I quite relate to Nietzsche in a lot of ways. I think that I
So did Adolf Hitler. It's totally understandable.
Yeah, yeah. It's not an ideal person to align yourself with, but I think we take different things from him, and I think that's really the key there. So yeah, I think Nietzsche would be my favourite. I think probably my least favourite would be one of the, you know, Aquinas or something, who was very heavy on religion and how that affects our world. And I'm not a religious person, so I can't really relate to any of the stuff he was on about. But yeah, some people can. So you've got to look at it from both sides.
Good. And generally, when you studied in Scotland, did you find that there was a difference in I don't know, attitudes or the way people outlooks on life compared to where you were? I mean, I guess they're not much different.
She was a Sassenach, Ben, let's face it.
But yeah, studying there and studying here and meeting different types of people, I guess you meet more Scots there, but do you find their way of life is slightly different, or has anything they've done changed the way you live now?
In St. Andrews, actually, weirdly, there's a lot of Americans. It's, you know, the majority of my friend group were American, so that was really interesting to have such a mix there. And so,
in fact, you even kept an American in your home for 6 months afterwards, you know, just because exactly. You couldn't bear to actually be without an American, which is fine.
So yeah, it was. I've been, you know, over there a couple of times in the summers to like go visit friends and stuff. So that's been really interesting to have, because it's. Weirdly, it's such a different culture, I feel like, in America. You don't expect it to be, but so many things are really different. So it's really fun to have those two mesh together. But in terms of Scottish people, there's not that many in St. Andrews, and weirdly, but I did work in a pub, so I spent a lot of time with the locals of the town, who were all very Scottish, and they were all really nice, but...
Scottish. Yeah, that says it all in terms of the way the sound was going there. They're really nice, but nobody can understand a word they're saying. They're Scottish.
So that was a really interesting dynamic to work with. Yeah, exactly.
Eloise, you obviously were in America last year dealing with children who would psychotically actually appear at the side of your bed in the middle of the night and say, are you my mummy? Or words to that effect. You might like to explain a little bit more about that. Have you found, as Poppy has, that there's a sort of difference in terms of the American way of seeing things and such like? Or is it a case of, well, look at their precedent?
Well, yeah, well, I worked looking after children in America for a few months last year. Yeah, it's quite different. Obviously, even the language, we both countries speak English, but the way they use words and that is completely different to the way we do. just everything is the same but slightly different, and they don't quite understand how English people eat.
Effectively, if we take the simple phrase bum bumping, that in America probably means killing tramps. It's just a way forward, you know? Don't get me started on Fanny, because that's a different line entirely.
Yeah.
But, so, Eloise, what have you been critically actually reviewing for us? You take over the mantle that Robin Pierce obviously has had. In betwixt times, is there anything that over the last couple of weeks or so you said, I was all set to talk about this, but then they didn't even call me up or give me any details?
Yeah, you've been messing me around, Alex. You don't love me anymore. I see how it is. Not ringing me, telling me I'm on, then not ringing me.
Anyway, anything that you've been doing in terms of your research, the spotlight is now on yourself, Eloise.
Well, since last week, I actually haven't for the first time, because I've been with my family for the first time in 6 months. So that sort of took precedent, because I've not seen them.
It's just being out of synchronicity with the whole thing. Never mind. Ben, it's time, probably when Eloise and Poppy might well sort of switch off completely. Although, I don't know, Poppy, are you into football at all?
Oh, no, not even.
Yeah, I figured that would be the case. Well, just because we need to just round this off. It's effectively the predictor challenge that Ben and myself have been, I think it's fair to say, quite vigorously contesting over the last few weeks. On Saturdays,
fairly competitive. I've been up and down. I think I've been majority in the lead, though, haven't I, Alex?
You have indeed. And just briefly going through the last batch of results: Arsenal 3, Watford 2. We both got the correct 2 points for predicting Arsenal win. If only Watford hadn't scored, I would have had 3 points. But no, we didn't. We equally got wrong: Burnley 1, Brighton 2. Who would have thought it, eh? Burnley being beaten by Brighton. Chelsea 2, Wolves 0. Again, we predicted 1-1 draws. Crystal Palace 0, Spurs 2. Crystal Palace 1, Spurs 1, which meant I was wrong with a 2-0 victory prediction. So were you with a 1-0 prediction. So we weren't really scoring very highly. Everton, Bournemouth, again, completely missed that. We both predicted 1-1 draws. It was actually a 3-1 win to Bournemouth. Didn't do them any good in the end because they went down. But at least Nathan Aki's now got a home to play for. Leicester City 0, Manchester United 2. Again, I got 2 points for that. You predicted a 2-2 draw. I said 1-3. Manchester City, so close this to us both getting 3 points. We both said 4-0. In fact, it was 5-0. So there we are. And then Newcastle 1. Liverpool 3, Ian Lennox, you'll be pleased to know, is still moving through a veil of tears, given the recent tragedy and lack of takeover, which we talked about extensively last night, which you can listen to. Southampton, Sheffield United, I actually predicted a win for Southampton and was correct with that, got 2 points, you said a 2-2 draw, and then finally we were both wrong with West Ham United 1, Aston Villa 1, which means, and I can tell Eloise, he's gagging for the final result on this particular one. You have wrapped up the season with 25 points. I, 7 points behind with 18 points. So I managed to claw back 2 points. You were 9 points ahead last week. But Ben Lewis, officially the champion of the Predictor Challenge, the Lockdown Predictor Challenge, 25 points to 18. I think there's a round of applause for Ben Lewis. There we are. Even though, as I say, you could almost see the glazed looks. You could almost hear the glazed looks come across with both Ben and Eloise, with Poppy and Eloise, and they're thinking, where are we going here, etc. Poppy, you've got a chance now to speak to two graduates of the University of Lincoln. What would you like to ask them, and who would you like to chat to?
I guess...
Ask them whether there are Scottish people in Lincoln, for instance.
Yeah, whoever wants to answer, judging by my answer on what it was like in Scotland and St Andrews, what do you think was the most different about studying in England and more specifically Lincoln, I guess?
Do you want to go first, Eloise?
You can go first if you want, Ben.
Well, that's very, very benevolent of you. I think for me, seeing a lot more northerners for a change. It was the most north I'd ever been, actually.
You are from Brighton, man. Let's face it, you know.
Yeah, true.
Anything north of, anything approaching Watford is like a foreign country.
Anything north of Watford is the north, as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot more people from Yorkshire, so I had to get used to new accents. I had no friends when I came. I didn't know anyone else who went to Lincoln. So it was basically starting from a blank canvas, I guess, which I quite liked. And then also, actually, everything was a lot cheaper. So it was quite a nice surprise, really, I must admit. But I think for me, I really, really, really enjoyed it. It's just the weather's a lot more cold up here. But besides that, yeah, that's me, really.
It is the north, but then again, you say you're currently in Lincoln. You know, the north is Teesside, Middlesbrough. I mean, Poppy, Stokesley. I mean, that is effectively like the outposts of northernness in many ways, isn't it, Poppy?
Yeah, it's actually Yorkshire Day today. So
exactly, it is Happy Yorkshire Day. Happy Yorkshire Day, Ben. Happy Yorkshire Day, Eloise. The day in which we folk in Yorkshire, even if we're in Middlesbrough, which technically is kind of like North Yorkshire-ish,
on the cusp,
etc., we will actually reach for our stutty cake and our foot of our stairs and basically say, "Hey up, my lads," or words to that effect. Ben, yeah?
Eloise's experience.
Yes.
Quite similar to yours, Ben. This is the furthest up north I've been from living in London and that as well. And I came on my own. I just found people were a lot nicer up here, a lot more polite than what I'm used to. A lot more welcoming.
Better manners, yeah, you see, Eloise, better manners.
Yeah, it was a lot different to being in London and down south. But other than that, I quite like it up here, so I'm going to stay. I think it's a lot nicer. The further up north you go, it seems to be a lot nicer.
And as I revealed a few days ago, Tuesday, very significant period of time, because Ben has gradually, he's been picking off the academics of the University of Lincoln. First of all, he actually has a coffee with Sam Perdue, a great person Sam is, working through wonderful stuff there. Today, I believe, he's actually sort of connecting in a similar place with Doug Brown, one of my colleagues on PR, etc.
Sam's going to be there as well.
Sorry? And
Sam will be there as well.
Oh, you, a double whammy. It's building things. Yeah, exactly. And then on Tuesday, it might well be myself that's there. I mean, I don't know. It's there. You really much, when I actually take that long 126-mile drive down from Teesside for the first time since March to actually...
from Seattle.
Exactly. It's very true. And who knows? I mean, should we invite Eloise to join us? Or maybe she's working then? I don't know.
Entirely up to you.
We don't know. Eloise, you could join us if you're free. If you're not,
I'd like to, if that's okay.
You're more than welcome to.
Well, there we are. Poppy is encamped solidly in Stokes. I'm not sure whether she's ready as yet for the journey down to Lincoln. You know, we have to build on this whole system because, let's face it, Poppy, every contribution you've made so far has been through the medium of either Zoom or indeed the telephone, which is fine. You know, it's all good stuff. So we've sorted out things out from that point of view. Eloise, anything you'd like to put to either Poppy or Ben?
I've actually got to leave, if that's okay. I have to go to work.
Well, that's what we figured. We were coming to the end of the whole piece for, basically, which is all over, because let's face it, when Eloise leaves the Poppy booth philosophy section, it's all over. You know, she's made that decision.
I don't have a choice.
Put the tree to one side. She's gone for the cat. It's all part and parcel of the whole
thing. It's your fault, Alex, for ringing me on the wrong day. So...
I'll just ease away from that. Poppy, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Yes, yeah, very interesting.
Marvellous. And Eloise, assuming that's not gin that you're actually slurping down there, just
it might be.
Yep, one of those two. Has it been okay for you? And where are you going to work this afternoon?
It has been great. Thank you, Alex. I'm going to make some cocktails in the Lincoln Jazz Bar. So. More alcohol for me.
Shameless plug as well. And technically, FA Cup final day, unless you're listening to this on another day entirely. Ben, okay for yourself?
Yep, all very good, thank you. Nice to see you both as well. See you all, in fact. It's been really, really enjoyable. So looking forward to the next one.
Which is coming up in a matter of moments, all being well, with Tessa Snart. Poppy, take care. Eloise, be well. Ben, see you very soon. Yes, it is time for the first ever Zoom-oriented Tessa Snart Tune of the Week, because normally I'm in the studio and Tessa's wherever she happens to be in the country, but we connect via the telephone system and then we play the tune, etc. The tune will be played, of course, that'll still be going out. But Tessa, although we've done other Zoomers, this is the first time for your official Tune of the Week.
It is. It's exciting. The very first Zoom, track of the week.
You've even changed your position, and you seem to be sitting very properly in front of a table which seems to have four symmetrically oriented items thereupon. Would you like to describe for the listener what exactly we're seeing at present?
Yes, well, this is actually my tablecloth, and you can see little rabbits I don't know if they're hares or rabbits, actually, but because they're quite tall. But they're all, yeah, they're actually across the whole of the table. But right. You can just see the four here.
And is this the table that actually saw the very first Tessa Snart Country in the Kitchen podcast?
It certainly is. Yep, it did. A couple, actually. A few. And then I did have to move upstairs, but we won't tell anyone.
Because it's still Country in the Kitchen, which is great. So far, I think you've been scoring very highly with Robin Pearce in terms of his scores for previous tracks. I don't know if you've heard the sort of responses he's been giving, but I think he's been very positive overall. Yeah. So that's all good. Ben, of course, has not heard this one, so we're going completely blind for this. And basically, you need to now provide a situation by which Ben should be seeking out this artist and actually make sure that they're downloaded on all the various social media he engages with.
Okay, here we go then. Well, if you're looking for a little pick-me-up, there's your hint. It's actually the title of the track. I think we all need a little bit of that sometimes, especially during this global pandemic. But this is a song by an artist called Hallie Kearns, and she's based in Nashville. This is her first single release, and she's only been in Nashville for 1 year, and she's already making a name for herself. She's worked with top singer-songwriters, producers. She's performed with a number of well-known names in Nashville and on the country scene. And this particular song, it's really a feel-good summer song, so it's right for the time. And anybody's a Kacey Musgraves fan out there, it's got vibes of her sort of music. Hallie's got a very soft sort of sound, but it's really, really nice and gentle. I don't know whether Ben will be a fan. I don't know whether Robin will be a fan. But let's see if they like this one. This is Pick Me Up by Hallie Kearns.
Been a long week. Work 9 to 5 plus overtime, and I barely made it to Friday. But now I'm finally free to do whatever I want. And if it's up to me, well, it's you. With your headlights in my front lawn, I just need a little pick me up. So come pick me up. We can hit the liquor store, spend $23, get drunk on cheap champagne. Forget about the world while we listen to the rain. I'm in need of some TLC, and the only way I want it's with your lips all over me. Tell me what you're waiting for. I'll be waiting on the front porch for you to pick me up. Cause I need a little pick me up. See your baby blues and ride with you in your Chevrolet. And pull off the highway, sit in your driveway for 10 minutes too long. Too busy making out to a John Mayer song. So hurry up, boy, come on. I need a little pick me up, so come pick me up. We can hit the liquor store, spend $23, get drunk on cheap champagne. Forget about the world while we listen to the rain. I'm in need. Some TLC, and the only way I want is with your lips all over me. Tell me what you're waiting for. I'll be waiting on the front porch for you to pick me up. Cause I need a little pick me up. Monday's gonna come around again, but that's alright as long as I get you for the weekend. I just need a little pick-me-up. Come on over and pick me up. Baby, don't keep me waiting. I'm in need of some TLC. The only way I want is with your lips all over me. Tell me what you're waiting for. I'll be waiting on the front porch for you to pick me up. Cause I need a little pick-me-up.
Ben, I'm obviously not going to ask you what you heard of that particular piece of music, because clearly that'll come in a different time zone entirely. But indeed, given that this is, I think, the first time you've joined Tessa for a kind of country theme show, apart from, I think, did you do one Sound and Country Vision with us? I'm not sure whether it was one or two.
I think I've done one. I can't remember. I've definitely done one. I know that at least one.
Yeah,
there was, let's go with that, at least one.
And I know we gave you the opportunity of joining a fair number of other times, but he basically, Tessa, he fled for the hills, basically. He said, no. But anyway, your chance now, Ben, to actually quiz the Queen of Country in the Kitchen, because that's her podcast, and indeed the regular weekly Tessa tunes that provide. What sort of questions would you like to put to Tessa at this moment in time?
Yeah, sure. How do you go about finding new artists and new music? What's your method or methods?
Well, my method to begin with was actually social media, because a lot of artists are actually really hot on Twitter. But now I get a lot of artists emailing me or direct messaging me through Twitter or Instagram. And so it's quite nice. I mean, there's a whole new wave of artists coming through on the country scene. And of course, it's not like the country and Western we knew. It's very poppy now and there's all different vibes. So yeah, social media, I would say, is probably the best way. And obviously through PR companies, they send me a lot of press releases now. And I think I've got a little bit of a social media presence now with Sound and Country Vision and now Country in the Kitchen. And obviously I pop all my details on there. And I think a lot of PR companies will go through, you know, social media to look up radio hosts, podcast hosts that are obviously willing to promote country artists, especially on the independent scene. So yeah, that's kind of how I go about it.
Okay, and how are you finding, is your audience growing? Has it grown over lockdown? And are you finding more people are listening to podcasts? And I guess the same question for you, Alex. Yeah. Are you finding more people are listening to podcasts since lockdown has happened and they've now got a bit more spare time to make time for those sort of activities?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I also find it's not just kind of the listeners, but once you've interviewed an artist, they tend to, when they've got the time, they do tend to support your podcast, which is really, really nice. I mean, most of the artists that I have featured on Country in the Kitchen now like and share my posts, which is really great. And then that's another way of reaching another fan base and more artists. Because of course, Country in the Kitchen also goes into Americana, blues, folk, rock. So you're kind of reaching all different artists then, which is really, really nice.
Okay, interesting. And what are you finding with the artists? What are you finding is there sort of, do they have any common features among them? So other than the fact that they sing the same genre, are they similar ages? Are they similar types of people? Do they enjoy similar things?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, Country in the Kitchen is more UK-based artists, whereas Sound and Country Vision, I feature the US artists as well. And UK country is very different to American country music. And you will find that a lot of the UK artists I have on, their writing is quite different and the style of music. It's still got the same, you know, I guess, country vibe, but it's very different. They sing about different things. In terms of their lifestyles, it's very different because, of course, Nashville is all kind of, I don't know, trucks and music bars. Here, I find the festival scene is really, really big. So like country to country, that's huge. But then again, if you go to country in certain festivals, you will find some of us like English folk, we are wearing the Western hats and the Western boots. So it kind of depends.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, of course. And are you finding a lot of the artists, if they had to adapt accordingly since festivals have not been able to take place this year? So are they having to do more podcasts, or have they had to restructure their whole plan for the year because of the impact of festivals, which obviously helps them with revenue, but also meeting new fans?
Yeah, so this is a great discussion point, and it's one I bring up pretty much in every single interview I do. Of course, all their gigs have been cancelled, so they're finding themselves doing a lot of live streams every week. And they actually often say to me they don't know why they haven't thought about doing more live streams before, but I guess that's because they're on the road more or they've got a lot of gigs. But, you know, it's quite nice for fans that can't get to the concerts or the festivals to be able to tune in, you know, online to see them. So there's been a lot of positives that has come out of this, and a lot of the festivals, as you'll know, have gone online. So Dixie Fields is it was in its second year this year, and that went online, and that was really good because they had like a host kind of interviewing all the different artists, and obviously if you'd bought a ticket, you could be a part, like on the screen, it's through Zoom, like a little bit like Zoom. I don't know what the actual software is called, and you can see everybody. Literally watching the artist. Some are in their gardens. They decorated the place as if they were at the festival. It's brilliant. But of course, like everyone says, it's not the same as actually being there, being in the atmosphere of the place and being with the people. But I think artists have really tried to adapt. And of course, a lot of them have been doing these, people can kind of give the tip jars type thing. They leave a link and They don't obviously pressure people, but they're there to kind of help if people are able and willing to do so.
Okay, interesting. And how do you think COVID will affect, I guess, the music industry, but also particularly country music going forward? Do you think, or maybe you've been told already, do you think more artists are going to do that live stream and more podcasts than what they traditionally did? Or do you feel like it's going to return to some form of normality like it did before?
I think definitely live streams will be a big thing now. But I do believe that once we feel comfortable to go out and go to gigs and travel again to different countries, I do think there will be a lot of people doing that. I think a lot of people are itching to get out there. The artists are itching to do the gigs. But they also know, obviously, for health reasons, it's not possible at the moment. But I definitely think in terms of the digital side and online, I think it will play a part in that now. Especially, I don't know, if an artist hasn't got a tour, maybe they'll start doing weekly live streams. And I know actually a few artists, The Rising, who I've featured a lot, they're an Irish duo. They started a podcast and they've been featuring other artists on there to help support them. And you do find that within the country music scene, the artists will support each other. It's not really a competition. They help each other, they share each other's music, and they tend to get on board with doing gigs together and live streams together. And a lot of the country radio stations and sites have come together to help them as well. So it's actually a really nice community, really.
Wonderful. And do you feel like you've met a lot of friends now since you've been doing the podcast? So a lot of these artists now becoming more friendships than professional relationships?
I think so, especially the ones that I'm, because obviously it's really, really hard to support every single artist in the world. There's just not enough hours in the day. But the ones that I've tried to feature regularly, like The Rising, I think, yeah, they have become friends, and I've been tuning into their live stream every Monday night. And you get to know them on a more personal level, and they want that as well. And I think then you can connect with their music better as well, on a better level. And so definitely I would say, I mean, look, we're all here, I guess I'm here to promote their music and to try and get as many artists on board, and they're there to promote their music, so we're all doing a job in a way, but we're all working together, so there is the sense of a friendship there.
And can you see in time with your Country in the Kitchen podcast, can you see artists coming to your house to record live in the kitchen?
That, do you know what? I haven't thought about it, but that's a very good idea, Ben. Really good, because actually I don't, I pre-record my interviews via Zoom, but I don't use video because my desktop upstairs that I use doesn't have a webcam or anything at the moment. So I don't think it would work. I've got to sort that out. But that's a very good idea. I could do that. And then I could be in the kitchen.